Welcome back to the program. Don't forget hour two, John Cooper, head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll drop by Frank Saravelli from Daily Faceoff as well. In the meantime, tonight it is Carolina and the New York Rangers. Hurricanes and the Blue Shirts, game five. Once again, it's Carolina, so it's the homer series. The home team wins every time with the Hurricanes. Why? I have no idea. Maybe Sarah Sivian from The Athletic does. Hello, Sarah.
Hey, yeah, I was just asking Jordan Martinook about this, and I'm like, you think we're making too big of a deal of this, right? Because it's become such a narrative when he's like, yeah, it's not like we're trying to lose on the road. Like, we're not entering these games saying, I hope we lose. Let's try to lose. It's just the way it's shaped out. But I think it's more about the power play, but it might be because they're on the road. I don't know. Who knows?
No, it's weird. Like, okay, first of all, so you mentioned Jordan Martinook. So is he in for Lorenz tonight? Is that what's happening?
It's almost completely confirmed. I think they have to double check just kind of like on his status after skate, but it's like, it's more certain than a game time decision, but not 100%.
Okay. And what would the thinking be? I'm getting like down the roster here, but what would the thinking behind that one be, Sarah?
I think they need some more energy after game four. And I think Martinook has been kind of nursing a little injury, and I think he's been ready to come back, but it's been a little like, a matter of they don't want to force him back in before they have to, but it's kind of, I think they could use a spark plug, and Martinook is always good at that.
Confirm or deny, Jordan Martinook still does the Mr. Svechnikov bit before games. Is that still a thing in Carolina?
That's the secret sauce.
I'll tell you, Siv, like, it's one of my favorite things. Howl. I can't stop watching that. It's one of my favorite attractions with the Carolina Hurricanes. I don't know what that says about me, but I just howl, giggle, whatever, whenever I hear / see it. What's the story of Carolina, the Hurricanes, for you this playoff season so far? The home road record. That's the obvious one. Get that out of the way.
I think that stars needing to like step up. It's been a lot of defensemen scoring. Like D'Angelo and Slavin led the whole team in points in round one, and then when that's not working in round two, it's been Ian Cole and Brendan Smith doing the game winners. So I asked Rod about that. I'm like, what's with that? And he goes, I think it's actually the better question is, why aren't our stars scoring? And I think that needs to be addressed. Every time the Canes lose, it's kind of like a ghost performance from Aho. And he's been fine. He had a couple weak games after that hit in round one. But you need more out of Andrei Svechnikov.
Is it just Svechnikov, or like, how deep does this go with the Hurricanes here? Like, I'm with you on Svechnikov. Like, he's a really big, strong, you know, elite left winger. And, you know, we've been waiting for like the major breakout for Svechnikov. But who else would you sort of paint with that same brush?
I mean, Trocheck hasn't had a goal or an assist in five games. So that's pretty big because he was such a good force in the first few games of the playoffs and in the regular season. And I think Nino's been pretty good. He's just hitting posts. Natchez has been a pretty puzzling one where that's been kind of going on throughout his contract year, though, and I think that's kind of in his head a little bit. But I thought last game four, was his strongest performance of the playoffs. He had a few good looks, and he had a post on the power play. So maybe he's rounding into form right now.
How much has the conversation the last few days been around the Trouba hit on Domi, or is all that done now?
I think that's done now. I mean, it looked like Domi was falling already. I asked Rod about it, and he just said, I think it's a clean hit. Like, I don't take a problem with it. We can't get an instigator there. That was the first instigator penalty of the playoffs, and I do think Reeves saying that the Rangers were going to kind of run some of their guys might have gotten in their heads, because Lawrence said, I just saw a guy on the ground, and then I'm like, I know he'd do the same thing for me, so I have to fight. But that ended up in an instigator, and then the Rangers capitalized. So they kind of beat the Canes at their own game of trying to stay calm and then scoring on the power play there, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, I can recall it at deadline, Max Domi, we all can, goes from Columbus to Carolina in like I think it was like a minute or maybe 30 seconds away from the deadline closing. It was right up. It's like right up against it to where, you know, Jarmo Kekalainen and Don Waddell were finally able to get this one done. But I remember making the point at the time and will still stick by it, and it might be an obvious point, but this is the best NHL team that Max Domi has ever played on. Like, he's played on some pretty, you know, mediocre teams in his time in the NHL. How's the fit been for Domi on this team?
I think the Canes are still kind of trying to figure it out. And I thought the adjustment in game 6 of the Boston series was interesting, to kind of halfway through that game, put him on the second line. Then game 7, he scores 2 goals. So I think once they figure out kind of the key there, I think that's kind of huge. But I like how he plays next to Kotkaniemi, but it's just kind of like you need more out of that guy, both of those guys, really. So I don't know. I kind of like the fit for the price, at least.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Jesperi Kotkaniemi here, and of course, this was a huge offer sheet. This was a huge, you know, battle between Montreal and Carolina. It was so much fun grabbing the popcorn on the couch and watching this thing play itself out between the Hurricanes and the Habs. Probably too early to evaluate Kotkaniemi on the Carolina Hurricanes, or are you there now, Sarah? Can you confidently say, okay, I know what's happening here. I'm confident saying, this is working, this isn't working. How do you see Kotkaniemi on the Hurricanes here?
Yeah, good question. I think it's more of a kind of long con type thing, and we're all looking at it in the short term, whereas who knows what's going to happen with Natchez and his contract, and then you got Trocheck, and I think it's something where you kind of the Canes need to put him in a bigger role before we can adequately judge if it was worth the price. But obviously right now it's not worth the price. I guess that's the whole deal with an offer sheet. You overpay to hope it'll work out in the long term. And he's still young, but I would like to see at least a goal from him in 11 games. Like, I think that's not too much to ask.
He's been I still maintain, this is one of the things with the Montreal Canadiens, and it even goes back to, you know, the Alexander Galchenyuk situation. We kind of saw this play itself out with Cole Caufield in some regards as well. You know, they grabbed Kotkaniemi at the Dallas draft, and then it was, you know, in the minors for a bit, up with the NHL, into the minors, healthy scratch. Like, it almost seemed as if he started his career doing stops and starts and, you know, up and down between the American Hockey League and the NHL. And I can't help but thinking, and listen, Montreal's got a history of this, rushing guys to the National Hockey League. The Devils have been accused of this. That's, you know, pretty obvious as well, of not allowing players time in the American Hockey League as well. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm just searching for answers here, Sarah, but I always look at Kotkaniemi and say, man, I wonder where this guy would be at if they just would have said, you know, first year and a half or year and change of your career, you're going to play in the American League. You're going to play in the minors, and you're going to be a better player because of it. And maybe it was just trying to justify the high pick. Maybe they needed Montreal's always needed a center, a big young center in the middle. I don't know, but I always look at this and say, what could have been if only they just would have left him in the minors for a year?
Listen, I'm hesitant to say what could have been when the guy's younger than me by a lot. I'll wait a few years, but I do think it's an interesting point, and I'm with you on it. But at the same time, look at Natchez. He was in the AHL for a year longer than he should have been because of his ELC sliding, and that's the only reason, to be honest. He should have been in the NHL, and I'm sure there's sour grapes over that. So maybe we'd be saying the same thing if KK stayed in the AHL. There's just no way to know. And I do think development's important, but I also think it's kind of valuable to have gone through a Stanley Cup run. You know, like, I think we just need to have some patience.
Don't think you're wrong. Are we talking about Antti Raanta enough? You know, we talked a lot about Jake Oettinger in the opening round. We've talked a lot of oxygen's been used up for Igor Shesterkin. Right now, Jacob Markstrom in Calgary, for the wrong reasons, is getting a lot of attention. Mike Smith is always an attention grabber. Should we be talking more about Antti Raanta and his performance in the playoffs, Sarah Sivian?
I think so, because he's had to, because it's kind of like Anderson has not returned. I feel like we're all a little bit surprised at how long that's taking, I guess. But and Renta has had to been good, and he is. Like, he stopped a lot of shots, and he has kept things close. Like, it's all about, especially in the playoffs, obviously, it's about the context of when you're stopping shots. So I know in round one, it kind of looked lopsided, and the Bruins kept winning by 4 goals or whatever at their home. But it was like 3 garbage goals at the end, and they had been really tight games. And I think everyone here is gaining a respect for Ronta for sure.
Yeah, he's been excellent. I want to end with a comment or two about the Carolina Hurricanes blue line. And you mentioned Tony DeAngelo earlier and Jacob Slavin. You know, there have been times where Brady Shea's been excellent, times where Brett Pesce has been outstanding as well. When you look at this blue line, not just this series, but the Boston series as well, you know, what jumps out at you right away?
I mean, I think D'Angelo either handling the kind of comments and taunting thrown his way or mishandling it. I think that can really pace the Hurricanes game. And you saw after the stick being thrown at Marchand, he came back and had his best performance of the postseason. And it's kind of like sometimes he's fueled by that. But I feel like the Rangers are targeting him enough in a good way, not with like the nonsense stuff, but like keeping him on the perimeter. And I think that has really been a key for them, kind of like containing him and Slavin in the series.
That has always been one of the strengths of this Hurricane squad. Before I let you go, the Too Many Men podcast is a phenom, is a juggernaut. It's crushing every leaving podcasts in their wake. You guys have been awesome. What's it been like recently? You guys are hitting, you know, hitting amazing heights here, Siv.
Well, we thank you for always being a staunch supporter of us. Seriously, you're the best. But it's been awesome to work with Dan Le Batard. I don't know how familiar Canada is world of Le Batard.
They
kind of let us speak our minds in a way that a lot of other places wouldn't necessarily give us the freedom to truly be ourselves. And our podcast is literally just our group chat. Like, whatever we're talking about, we just say out loud. And it's been so freeing and great. So thanks for the plug.
Allison's already a standout in Seattle. You're so well established. And I'll tell you, man, I've said this before publicly and privately, Goldman's going to be a star. Shayna is going to be such a star in this industry. Oh, my God. It's embarrassing how good she is.
It's awesome to see.
Should be the best. Sarah, great stuff as always. Enjoy game 5 in what will inevitably be a Carolina Hurricanes win, and then jump ball when it goes back to MSG. We shall see. Thanks, Sarah.
How it goes. Thanks so much. See you later.
Be good. Sarah Sivian from The Athletic, one-third as well of the Too Many Men podcast, along with Allison Lucan and Shannon Goldman, which is a great pod and a lot of fun. And finally, nice to see people are starting to pay attention. Coming up on the program, John Cooper is going to drop by in hour two. Frank Saravelli, top of the hour as well. Bring on Maddie Marchese here, our producer. First of all, great job getting Coop. That's going to be a nice touch. I'm probably sure you're the same way. Still stunned that there hasn't been more personal accolades for Cooper. You know, Julian Brisebois, Elliot mentions as well, has never won the general manager of the year. What are your thoughts on Cooper?
Well, first, I tried to get him tomorrow when you were off, but it didn't work. So, I mean,
but just trying to sabotage. Well, what's it like having your producer sabotage your career? Well, let me tell you about Matt Marchese.
Exhibit A. It's funny because when we talk about John Cooper and what he's accomplished, like literally all he's done since he came into the NHL is win. All he's done at every level he's coached at is win, whether it be when he was coaching Tier 2, I believe it was the Odessa Jackalopes of the North American Hockey League, whether it be coaching in the AHL with Norfolk, and just everywhere he's gone, he's just won. And the fact that he doesn't have a Jack Adams trophy it's a shame on the award, really, because all we want to do is look at, hey, this team wasn't expected to be here, so this guy should win Coach of the Year. How about the guy that just constantly wins every year? shouldn't he get an award? Isn't there something to be said for longevity and being able to win and win at a high level like he has? And I think that's where it's funny because we haven't even gotten to voter fatigue with him. He's just never had a chance. Like he's so good, you can't even get tired of him.
Okay, spot quiz. You ready?
I'm listening.
Who did Cooper take over from? That's how long it's been.
I know.
And you think of how differently this team played under this coach.
Was Rick Tocchet the coach?
No, Tocchet was one before this gentleman.
Well, it was Torts.
No, Torts goes back to the glory years, the first Stanley Cup, sir. All right.
Who
Guy
am
Boucher.
I missing
here? Guy Boucher.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes, yes, yes. The man who, along with Jarmo Kekäläinen, could play a villain in a Bond movie.
Yes, absolutely. And who just refused to forecheck. And it was safe.
How'd that turn out?
2013. John Cooper's been behind the bench in Tampa since 2013.
And you know what the thing with all of this is, Jeff? One of the nicest guys that you'll deal with in the business.
He is,
John
too.
John is just such a nice man.
And really, really smart as well. One of the things if we have enough time, bring up with him. I remember talking to him a few years ago for the podcast, and I asked him, what's the best team he ever coached? And he said, well, I'll ask you, what do you think he said?
I don't know. How long ago was this? Like, had they won cups already?
A few years ago.
I was going to say, you know what? I think it was that last year he coached in the AHL. I think that's what he would say.
He said, Team North America at the World Cup.
Yeah. Geez, I forgot that he even coached there.
wonder if he still feels the same way. We'll ask him that in an hour or two. Frank Saravelli from Daily Faceoff joins me here in a couple of moments. And John Cooper, head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, still to come in an hour or two as well. Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Back in a moment.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with JD, Blake, and Ailish. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2 across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Glad to have you aboard today. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk to John Cooper, head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Andy Strickland will join me here in about 15, 20 minutes' time. We'll catch up on the St. Louis Blues. Big win last night. Tyler Bozak with the OT Heroics. Big game out of Robert Thomas. Big game and a losing cause from Nathan MacKinnon. 3 goals, one of them highlight, will be replayed forever. Added an assist as well, but to no end for Colorado. Game 6 at Enterprise Center on Friday. Meanwhile, Battle of Alberta rages once again this evening as the Flames look to stave off elimination at the hands of the Edmonton Oilers up 3-1. Frank Saravelli is there in anticipation of the Battle of Alberta from Daily Faceoff, and he joins me now. Frank, how are you, pal?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
Good. How's the city? What's the vibe? Is it nerves? Is it tension? What is, like, I'm always curious about a city on a potential closeout night.
It feels a little nervous. And to be frank, having been here for the start of the series in Calgary, there have been a lot of tense and nervous moments, I think, in the Saddle Dome, not just, to start the series, but also going back to game 7, I was just thinking how quiet it was at varying points as Jake Ottinger stood on his head. And then, they blow 2 separate 4-goal leads in game 1 and, are in a spot to take game 2 again. And the Oilers have just had every answer. And this series has been really odd because I think so many facets of it have happened exactly the opposite of the way we all kind of cooked it up in our brains.
I've always, the Game 7 phenomenon that you describe, I don't know if this is a distinctly Canadian thing. Maybe you'll be able to suss this out as an American. But I've always felt that there's a different Game 7 vibe when it comes to the NHL in the United States as opposed to Canada. With Canada, it seems as if, Frank, we're predisposed to worry so I can understand the long stretches of nervous quiet. Whereas in the United States, game seven, it's just like nervous energy. Let's just get it all out and, you know, behave like proper sports fans. Do you, you know, in your experience, have you sensed a difference in audiences between game sevens in Canada and the United States?
Not necessarily. And I've been to a lot in both countries. I just think maybe to your point, it's harnessed a little bit better. Just thinking of the one that stands out the most, 2019 game seven, Boston, St. Louis, mm-hmm. That place was on fire. I don't know. I think there's been nervous parts in both places, like game seven, Penguins, Sens, 2017 Eastern Conference final. There was a lot of nervous energy in Pittsburgh. Like it's gone both ways. It really depends, I think, on how the game begins to unfold. I've just noticed more times than I expected Calgary this season, the fans have sat on their hands a lot at the Saddledome.
It's weird.
And I don't know why Jeff, that's a controversial statement. It was like one of those things I had tweeted innocuously. Someone replied and asked me, which building has been louder, Edmonton or Calgary? And I said, Edmonton, not even close.
Oh,
and
it's, Edmonton, yeah.
For whatever reason, that was a thing.
You know, I remember during that that run to the Stanley Cup and they in 2006, and they ultimately flamed out against the Carolina Hurricanes. I went to games in the San Jose Edmonton series and the Anaheim Edmonton series, and like, Frank, it's one of the loudest buildings I've ever been in my life. Nonstop from the opening puck drop right to the very end, like one of the, like, you know those games where you leave the rink and your ears are ringing because it's so loud, even though you're up high in the press box. That was the Edmonton experience from that 2006 Stanley Cup run.
Yeah, and it's not an indictment at all of Calgary fans. The markets are just different. Like, they just are. Edmonton fans are so passionate. Oiler fans don't miss anything. And they've done an amazing job at Rogers Place. I went to the first ever game there. I was there in their playoff run in 2017. They found a way to fill out the space in there and make it louder. And it's an incredible place to watch hockey. And also it's a reminder too, how much Calgary needs a new arena being at the Dome. It's night and day experiences.
Yeah, it really is. The question that a lot of people are wondering about is what's happened to Jacob Markstrom. And much like we can't figure out, you know, the home road situation with the Carolina Hurricanes, we can't figure out the net mining situation with Jacob Markstrom. Like, it's almost as if, you know, these two goaltenders have, you know, Mike Smith and Jacob Markstrom completely switched identities in some ways. Certainly on that first goal in game four, the tap in by Ryan Nugent Hopkins. Any idea what's happened here to Jacob Markstrom?
I've never been a big believer, Jeff, and I'd be curious to get your take on what goaltending splits mean in a season against a particular team, in a career, in a tenure. And I just take a look at Markstrom's numbers against the Oilers as a member of the Flames, .868 save percentage, and it's not a small sample size. Like, it is... it's a decent run of like 14, 15 games where he struggled mightily. And even if you extrapolate the numbers out further and you go back to his previous stops in his career, 30 games against the Oilers, regular season, .901 save percentage against everyone else. Mm-hmm. They're by far really the worst team that he's faced. And I don't know what that means. I think that at some point it has to correlate to something. And I do think that there has been some extra juice in this series, some extra motivation, not just on the part of Smith, who squeezes out every drop that he can get, but also just on the Oilers side. That's a guy that they almost signed. And I haven't been able to confirm it, but there were rumblings, Jeff, that Jacob Markstrom had even told some Oilers players in that free agency in 2020 that he was coming to Edmonton. And I think that stuck with them.
I can, I can tell you for a fact that up until about 2 hours until the free agent window opened, everybody in Edmonton was convinced, like Frank, completely convinced that they had Markstrom. And I think it was like, I believe, I got to go back and look at my notes from the day, I think it was about 2 hours before the window opened that Markstrom's camp called Edmonton and said, we're going to Calgary. Like that was major, major scramble mode for the Edmonton Oilers. I think they looked at Kemper at that point too, but they thought that they were getting Jacob Markstrom. Like that was it. That was going to be their final piece. Everybody was convinced that Markstrom was going to become an Oiler. And that was the answer for the goaltending issues. And then like literally right before the window opened, now I'm going to Calgary. That was a huge blow for the Oilers. Because then goalie carousel started, right? Because I want to say that, again, I'm just doing this off the top of my head, they had a deal in place maybe with Buffalo for Koskinen at that point too. So they were going to sign Markstrom. Koskinen was going to go to Buffalo. And then Markstrom and Smith was going to be the battery for the Edmonton Oilers. And that was, you know, going to be what they were going forward with Connor and company. But your info is bang on from the people that I've talked to there. Like that was very much a thing. And that was and it has been a tough one for Edmonton to recover from. And you might make the argument they never have.
Well, I would make the argument the other way, that it's kind of amazing that they didn't. And I know there were questions lingering all season long about Edmonton's goaltending. Can Mike Smith's body at 40 handle the rigors of the NHL? He had some incredible moments and, you know, throughout the season, you know, he missed a 10-week stretch. He missed another 5-week stretch. He had a 4-game losing streak in the 830s. Like, it's been a wild year, but if you go back and you reverse everything and you say, okay, so if the Oilers are spending this money on Jacob Markstrom, well, for one, they definitely aren't able to sign Zach Hyman. They're probably not able to squeeze in someone like Evander Kane. Like I feel like in some ways they've used the money wisely since then, and they're in a spot now where Smith has also been the better goaltender in this series, which I just wrote a piece on dailyfaceoff.com just about what a character Smith is. Like, he's had these moments this playoffs where the game one gaffe against the Kings, game one against the Flames, you know, 3 goals in 6 minutes, and he's on the bench wearing a ball cap. Yeah. He's, you know, think about the 132-footer, the goal from Red Deer by Rasmus Anderson. And yet, here's Mike Smith, 7-3, .931 save percentage this postseason, career numbers of .931 save percentage in the postseason in his career. And he finds a way to flush it all. Like, he just does. He's unapologetically himself. There's like warts and all, and he's been a darn good goalie.
And he may have given us one of the best scenes so far in these playoffs, coming back from the you know, spending time with the concussion spotter. I mean, you might as well have just played Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme as he's coming back to the rink, and he's got like the same like Steve Austin strut. Like, if there's ever a moment where a hockey player is going to feel like either a superhero, Frank, or a pro wrestler, it was that moment where Mike Smith came back. And Frank, the rink exploded like the cork out of a champagne bottle. It was insane, that sound, Frank.
You likened it to a wrestler, maybe. For me, it was like a Roman gladiator entering the Colosseum. It was unbelievable to be in there and to hear it and to see, you know, the reaction and the support. Like, he had pitched a shutout at that point. The shutout bid had ended because Koskinen had to enter, and then he let in one anyway, but he's got 2 shutouts. That was almost 3. Like, I think he's authoring one of the most compelling stories going in the playoffs with everything that's happened, as bad as he's looked at times, to bounce back. And it's really, really clear. Jay Woodcroft talked about this yesterday. The idea that his teammates, you can see they want to play for him. They want to win for him. And you can tell that's not the case with every goalie around the league.
So I had someone text, I was saying this to Elliot in the first hour. I had someone text me this morning with a really interesting, really interesting about this series and the Rangers Carolina series about the goaltending, Igor Shesterkin and Mike Smith. And he was saying, look, I think this is what's happening here. The Calgary Flames are a strong forecheck team, but if you have a strong, if you have a strong puck handling goaltender, that can take a lot of that away. That can negate your forecheck. It can certainly, stop, any establishment of a cycle in the offensive zone. Do you think that's what we're seeing here with the Oilers and the Flames, and also, well, more so at home than on the road, the Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes, that the puck handling goaltender is holding up the strong forechecking team?
I think that's part of it. I've also noticed a marked difference in Smith and the way that he's handled the puck. Like, he, as you know, is one of the best puck handling goalies of all time. Yes. He's definitely been way more conservative. You can tell he's so excited when the puck comes around. Like, he's always looking for different options, but he's really toned it down since that game on error against the Kings, and is a lot of times making the more conservative play and sometimes just leaving it without doing anything. But it does slow things down in terms of, the Flames' ability to get in there and wreak havoc. And I think that's one part of it, but I also think the other part has been, because Connor McDavid has torched this team, the other thing that I saw in Game 3 was that their forecheck was soft. And I don't know if – I still can't figure if that was – and Daryl Sutter won't tell us if that was by design – or was that out of deference to McDavid and respect? Because you can tell every time he hops over the boards, they're looking around. Like, their heads are on a swivel, and they're, I don't want to say nervous, but you can almost feel them tense up a bit. That's how special he's been in this series. That's how much he's put them on their heels. And I think that's also had an impact on their forecheck. That's one of the real – there's a number of surprises, but that's one of the real surprises for me in this series is this team that had played to such an identity all season long and was so successful with it, they're rambunctious when they're good. And they've just looked very average with that forecheck. And I don't know what they're thinking, if that's what they want to do to try and counteract. They almost sat back in a little bit of a 1-2-2. And I was figuring at some point they may try and even go to a 1-3-1. And it's been really interesting to watch, because I just wasn't expecting that team to do that.
This might be tough to do with the English language, Frank. Maybe there's another language that can describe it adequately. If there is, I don't know it. I know English and a little bit of French. Maybe another language that can do this. But how would you describe what we're seeing from Connor McDavid right now?
Okay, so Faisal actually asked me this last night on Sportsnet Central. He said, give me one word, and I was put on the spot, and I was like, huh. I just said otherworldly. I don't know. We're out of superlatives to describe him. I've never seen a player that's so special in his own right find a way to take his game to another level in that he's doing things that we've never seen him do before. If you watch closely, the space that he's created for himself out near the blue line, that's not typical regular season McDavid. That, he's been an incredible edge, player on his edges and skater his entire life. The cutbacks that we've seen in tight spaces have been next level. The races to pucks that he has no business winning or getting to, he's doing it. And he's made everyone else look good on his team in the process. And it's so interesting to size up this game 5, because in some ways I'm thinking, okay, Markstrom, he's got to find a way to bounce back at some point, you would think. The Flames will get better at getting to their identity. Their stars have to show up. Johnny Gaudreau has been quiet. Matthew Tkachuk has been quiet. 200-point players. Yeah. Their depth has not been very good. But then I'm saying to myself, it's Connor McDavid and it's an elimination game. Like, why wouldn't the Oilers win tonight?
It almost... I still think there's something big to give from the Calgary. Like, I refuse to believe that they're going to go down like this, that they'll only squeak out one win. But then to that last point you just made, don't ever bet against Sidney Crosby and don't ever bet against Connor McDavid. This guy is, to your point, absolutely next level right now. Frank, this is going to be a wonderful night. Very much look forward to it. Enjoy it. Should be a fascinating game. Every game in this series has been intriguing. Thanks so much for this, as always. Great work at Daily Faceoff. That's a given. And thanks, as always, for stopping by.
Thanks, Jeff. Talk to you soon.
Frank Cervelli from Daily Faceoff joining us. Battle of Alberta tonight. Don't forget, two big games on the network this evening. It will be the Rangers and the Hurricanes, 7 o'clock Eastern on East Ontario and Pacific. And then later, CBC and Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, once again, 9:30 Eastern. Ron McLean, your host, the Edmonton Oilers facing off against the Calgary Flames. There will be a Game 6 between the St. Louis Blues and the Colorado Avalanche. Tyler Bozak and Robert Thomas saw to that specifically. And in his own way, so did Justin Falk. With that story, we defer to Andy Strickland, ringside host in St. Louis with the Blues. He joins me now. Andy, how are you, pal?
Jeff, no complaints whatsoever. People feel good here in St. Louis today, as you would expect. It's amazing, by the way, when they win, how like the entire like city is like happy St. Louis today, you know?
But that's because, you wear a number of hats. Like, you host radio, ringside on Bally Sports, host of the Cam and Strick podcast. Like, you have your thermometer in the community. Like, you know what's going on. And that is, like, St. Louis is one of the most passionate hockey bases in all of North America. Like, that doesn't surprise me at all. Like, that happens in Toronto, that happens in Montreal, happens everywhere in Canada. It doesn't surprise me at all that the city just feels better after a night like that.
Oh, yeah. No, I dropped 3 kids off of school today. And the teachers are happy. Everybody's happy. And honestly, the amount of Blues gear that people wear around town is just crazy. I mean, you hardly even see Cardinals stuff. And obviously, you know, the Cardinals are still big and whatever.
Yeah.
They've got so much gear. I mean, since the Blues won the Stanley Cup, it's just completely gone to an even higher level than it already was, man. I mean, the Blues were so popular before they won the Cup, and now they win the Cup. And, you know, people start to get that feeling once again, you know. And I know that, listen, they're down in the series. They got a long way to go. But everyone was still so down when they were down 3-1. And to win a game like that when you thought they had zero chance, like no chance whatsoever, they're down 3-0. They're getting outplayed. It was a storybook game for Nathan MacKinnon. It was just like meant to be. Here's his chance. He's going to get past the second round for the first time. He's having one of the best playoff performances, like a historic playoff performance, really, when you think about hat-trick at home, the type of goals he was scoring yeah. late, coming up clutch. It was meant to be, and St. Louis just wouldn't go away, man. It's just absolutely crazy how that played out.
So what's the most popular nameplate when you see around town? You see everyone wearing their Blues jerseys. What's the most popular nameplate?
Probably Tarasenko. You know, I mean, people see Tarasenko. They love Tarasenko. O'Reilly, for sure. My son and his son actually go to the same preschool. I just saw him at pickup, you know, just now. So it's, you know, he's just like a regular dad today. You know, it's so funny. How cool would that be? Ryan O'Reilly's picking you up from preschool. And, you know, the kids, they know who he is. You know, I'm going to be at practice later on tonight. You know, my son plays on the same team as Vladimir Tarasenko's son, and Kyle Clifford's son was also on the team who before he got traded to Toronto. But like, I'll see David Perron at the rink tonight. I'll see Tyler Bozak at the rink. Like, these guys are always there. Their kids are skating. Steve Ott's kids are skating nonstop, and I'll see his kid at the rink tonight too. I mean, so like, these guys are like part of the hockey community. It's not just like you see them on TV or you go to the game and you may see them on the ice. Like, you see them at the rink too. So it's fun, man. And hockey has never been more popular than it is now here in St. Louis.
Well, and it was Tyler Bozak that kept it alive. And, you know, Bozak's an interesting story. You know, last year coming off the $5 million contract, test the market to see what's out there. The music winds down. He's without a chair and goes back to the St. Louis Blues on a $750,000 special. Do you have a thought here on Tyler Bozak and, you know, not just the game last night and the shot, you know, that fourth line didn't see much ice at all in the later stages of this game, but just, you know, what the last, I don't know, 10 to 12 months have been like for Bozak?
Yeah, well, like, reality kind of hits you in the face when you play a long time in the NHL, and all of a sudden you just, like you said, it's almost like musical chairs. Like, where do I fit in? And I always believed, and listen, kind of keeping in touch with him throughout the offseason and his agent, that, you know, listen, this is the best spot for you. I mean, the Blues were always interested in bringing him back. They had that one-year offer on the table virtually the entire offseason. He just didn't want to take it. He wanted to explore free agency and see what else is available to him. But at the end of the day, you know, he came here. He's super tight with a number of players on the team, like really, really close. Like he and Braden Schenn, you know, Robert Bortuzzo, Jaden Schwartz before that, before he left. And there's some other guys too. But, you know, you just knew that this is probably going to be the best spot for him. But even during the course of the season, Jeff, he was a healthy scratch and he gets hurt, missed a long time with an injury. You know, there were some salary cap implications that played into maybe him sitting out longer than he would have liked because they couldn't go over the cap and they had to, you know, be strategic from that standpoint. But he was a healthy scratch too earlier for the first time, really probably in his entire career. Completely different ballgame. Listen, Alexander Steen went through this a few years back too, the year they won the Cup.
Yes, that's
and
right.
He didn't like being called a fourth line player. I remember talking to him about that. He didn't want to be called a fourth line player. His role was probably, it definitely was. It was bigger than what Bozak's is now. I mean, you know, Steiner wasn't playing like, you know, 7 minutes a night. And he and Barbashev and Oscar Sundquist, these guys had a monster role and were a big part of the Blues' success in the playoffs. They don't win the Stanley Cup without them. They started every period. You know, so this is even different for Tyler Bozak. But listen, man, you can never predict who's going to come up big on the biggest moments in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We've seen this movie before. It happens all the time. And it's never a bad idea to throw the puck on net either because you never know what's going to happen. Because I think it did hit something on the way to beating Darcy Kuemper. But, man, everyone on social media now, Jeff, you know, you go into overtime, everyone's picking their overtime hero. I didn't see one person say Tyler Bozak.
Who did you pick for the record?
I was thinking it was going to be like a Schenn or a Kyrou. You know, they were playing together. They had some success there. They had some shifts in the offensive end. They had Toropchenko playing up there with them, too. I just liked the way that they were playing. And I thought that, you know, with Schenn having not scored yet in the playoffs, let alone this series, and Kyrou was a little more visible in last night's game, kind of dancing around a little bit, I thought maybe they would get a chance and they would score. You know, for the Blues side, I didn't know who was going to score for Colorado, but it's I don't know. You just wonder how demoralizing that is for Colorado when you have a lead like that and then you give it up not once, not twice, not three times, not four, like basically a 5-0, you know, yeah, 3-0 lead, up 4-3, up 5-4, I mean, or whatever it was. You know, the Blues came back, what, twice to tie the game in the last 5 minutes of the game and then had to go into overtime and hit the reset button. That can't be easy to do.
And none of it happens if Justin Falk doesn't shut down Gabriel Landeskog and prevent the empty netter. Like, I was making the point off the top of the program today, Andy, that if the Blues can do this, like if they can carry this momentum into game 6 and 7 and actually knock off Colorado, first of all, man, the questions begin in Colorado big time. But two, I think the play that we go back to is Falk shutting down Gabriel Landeskog. Because if he hits that empty netter, it's over. It's done.
It is.
We're not talking about, you know, St. Louis is happy and Ryan O'Reilly's picking up his kid and like that. No. And like everyone's at the rink and all smiles and hey, there's David Perron and high fives. And no, we're not talking about any of that.
No, we're not. Hey, listen, I thought people maybe were a little bit too hard on Landeskog afterwards that maybe he should have shot. I mean, the more I watch it, like I could see him thinking, okay, I got to get a better angle. I got to get here before I let it go because Justin Falk was closing so hard that I didn't know if he would have been able to like block that anyway. Like, was there really a clear path for Landeskog to shoot at? And do you let it go anyway, just even if you don't feel like you have a clear path, just in an effort to try to score the goal there and close it out? And so I don't know if he was just trying to get the red line to avoid the icing. I don't know if he really felt like he had a good enough angle to get it in. That's just my feeling looking at it now, but it was a hell of a play by Justin Falk to close on him, obviously prevent any type of attempt from really happening, but then to hold the zone and keep the puck in the zone, just to keep the play alive. I mean, that was a hell of a play. I mean, it's not like he was 2 feet inside the blue line. This guy was straddling the line, and the puck was bouncing, and it was coming hard, and to be able to stop it with his skate and keep it onside was incredible. I mean, it really was. Even the overtime goal that that Bozak scored. I mean, Nick Leddy made a hell of a play at the blue line to keep the puck in the zone as well. Like, super calm, casual, made it look easier than it really was. To be able to, you know, kick it from his skate to his stick in that situation under pressure, and then obviously make a play that leads to the goal. And these guys are world class for a reason, man. I mean, Nick Leddy, let me just say this real quick, and as good as Justin Falk.
He had a really good game.
Because Falk struggled his first year here in St. Louis coming over from Carolina. You had the elephant in the room with Pietrangelo still here, people wondering if he was replacing Pietrangelo. But he's really turned it on the last couple of years. Nick Leddy, I said it before I even knew the Blues were going to trade for him, that this was probably one of the most under-the-radar pickups at the trade deadline, because I didn't realize how much playoff experience he had had. Like, he had like played 120 playoff games entering the playoffs this season. And that's a lot for a 30-year-old player. He's won a cup. He's been to several conference finals. And so you pick up a player like him at the trade deadline when everyone's talking about the Ben Sherratts and the Mark Giordanos and all these other guys who the Blues never had any interest in. They're like, no, give me the guy who can skate, who plays with composure, under pressure, who's got big game experience, who's won and can handle being on the big stage, man. He's been a perfect fit for the Blues.
He really has. Andy, we're up against it. Always good, man. Thanks for carving out time. I know it's a busy day, even though it's an off day. I know it's a busy one for you and the St. Louis Blues organization. Thanks, as always, for this. Listen, a day like this, the sun's a little brighter, shining a little bit nicer. The air is a little more clear. It's a wonderful day to be a St. Louis Blues hockey fan. Thanks, as always, pal.
Jeff, you know I'm long-winded. I give long answers, man. I'm sorry. Have a great day.
I like it. You know me. I've known you going back to, like, when did we first meet? Like 2003 or something like that?
22 ago, something like that. Yeah.
Jeez, man. I've known you a long time, man. I love the Strick vibe. I love the Strick vibe. You know that. Thanks, pal. You be well.
You're the best, Jeff. Talk soon.
Andy Strickland, ringside reporter, St. Louis Blues, Bally Sports, Midwest, also part of the Cam and Strick podcast. That is a must listen, as will our next interview be. John Cooper is the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. He joins me in moments as the Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet radio network.
Breaking down everything in Leafsland better than anyone. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. The Tampa Bay Lightning await the winner of the Carolina Hurricanes-New York Rangers series. So maybe you're asking yourself, what does a team do when they have a lengthy wait for a series to end? John Cooper, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, he joins me now, perhaps with that answer. John, how are you today?
I'm great, thanks. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well. You know, it's always good to take care of your business early, and I do want to talk about the Florida Panthers series here now, but, you know, as you await to see what happens with Carolina and the New York Rangers, I know the coaching staff will certainly be, you know, watching and breaking down all the games and, you know, trends and tendencies for both squads, depending on who you're going to face in the next round. But how do you handle the players? Like, what's the instruction to the players as we now, you know, wait for this next round to begin for you guys?
Yeah, it's a little different, actually. We've had a pretty good run here the past almost a decade. And, you know, I've been on the, unfortunately, I've been on the side of the sweep on the bad end a couple times, but never on the good end. So this has been a little different for us to have quite this break. But unlike any other year, probably at this point in the playoffs, we've not been this banged up from what I can remember in the past. So I don't know if I'd love having the huge breaks just because, yes, you get the kind of physical aspect of it to kind of try and heal up as much as you can. But, you know, as much as that is, it's the mental aspect you worry about and the edge and the and being in the fight and all those things that naturally you just lose when you have this much time off. So, but on the other side of things, you know, as I talked to the guys today, you know, we've veteran enough group to understand where we are, the magnitude of this situation. And, you know, being in the game and also being a fan, you know, you get to sit back and watch and, you know, not really have to stress out about what's going on. So it's different for us, but you know what? We needed the break.
But, you know, I'm hearing you say this about maybe losing the edge, you know, time off. Sure, it's good to heal, but, you know, you're concerned about, you know, the mental side of the game. You know, I'll be honest, John, if it's any other team, you know, I might pick up what you're putting down. But I think of your Tampa Bay Lightning squad, and whether it's Hedman or Stamkos, I mean, pick a leader on this squad. You know, I keep going back to this conversation that Elliot and I had with Stamkos at the Players Tour in Chicago, where he said, like, look, we just need to get to the playoffs. After that, we know what to do. This is a unique team that you have here. Like, I don't get the sense that you have to do, you know, much sharpening of the blade in the postseason, if you know what I mean, that a lot of it is almost already done by the players. Is that accurate?
I would say that is accurate. Again, I think these last few years, and even the years that we didn't win, it's just kind of all a build up to where we are today. And so that mental aspect, there's no doubt. But the one thing you can't replicate is getting hit. And, you know, we skated today, but it's as no contact as you can get. And and those are the things, is like making those plays under pressure when somebody's barreling down on you. You just can't replicate that stuff. And when you're in the playoffs and you're in the fight, that stuff never goes away. That becomes second nature. So those are the little things for a coach you worry about, and, you know, not putting your guys through the wear and tear, but also, you know, hopefully, you know, being able to step back into the ring and have everything go right. But it's there's no perfect scenario. The perfect scenario is win your series. Doesn't matter if you win it in four or you win it in the seven, and that's what we did, and we'll just have to go on from there.
So maybe this is unfair, but I've been doing it nonetheless. I was a big fan of the early 80s New York Islanders teams, and the 1983 team was a very specific one. That was the last year of that Islanders dynasty. We all know the Gretzky quote about walking past the room after getting swept by the Islanders and seeing the exhausted players and the ice bags and the stitches and the bruises and the blood and all that. And like, okay, well, that's
the
what
Rick Riley book. Was it Rick Riley that wrote that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you know it. I mean, you know all this stuff. So like I'm this year specifically, and this playoff, and maybe game two specifically, and that one scene where, you know, Hagel's going down the tunnel and Stamkos is coming out and everyone's diving in front of shots and there's blood all over jerseys and how is this guy gonna come back? And I'm getting these like 83 Islanders vibes from this year's edition of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Like, I don't know if it's a fair comparison or you even think this way, but does that resonate with you at all, John, that 83 Islanders team and this team right now? Like, everybody sacrifices for the team. That was the story of the Islanders. And I look at Tampa, and I'm getting the same soap and warm water feeling.
Yeah. Well, it tells you that Gretzky was telling the truth. I'll tell you that. It's for the teams that, you know, like for every team, and we're not just the only one. Like any team that goes deep, they're feeling the same thing. I think that, and I think it was somebody with your group that put it out. And I don't really, especially in the postseason, I don't get onto the social media, but there was a really good montage of the guys coming in out of the tunnel. And let's be honest, the guys were getting hit in the puck with faces. Everybody's getting stitches. Probably a little bit of an aberration for all that to happen in one game. But it's kind of been the tail of the tape for this group. I think we have a different team. The first two cup-winning teams were pretty much the same. This year's team, there has been a lot of turnover. And so we do have a bit of a different group. And then, you know, we lose Braden Point for the series, so it kind of takes a 200-foot, really highly skilled impact player out of your game. And now you kind of have to change a little bit. You can't, you know, rely on some of these skill guys bailing you out. We kind of had to play more of a team defense, maybe that thought process in our game, and we've really done that. And I know, you know, Vasi was just brilliant in game four. But that was the first three games. I thought we played a pretty sound defensive game, did what we had to do, and give Florida credit. I mean, those guys gave us everything we possibly could have had in the fourth game. And our goalie, you know, I'll be the first to admit our goalie may have stole that one for us. But it's also a reason why you try and get a 3-0 lead. So if you don't play as well, maybe you can squeak one out and end the series. And that's what we did. But it was to the lot of the effort of our penalty kill, the shot blocking, the just commitment to keep the puck out of the net. big thing about what the Islanders did as well.
You know, there's a couple of things there. One, Kelly Rudy always reminds me you should never apologize for having a great goaltender. He always says, you know, last time I checked, goaltenders were part of the team. It's okay if you have a great one. You shouldn't have to apologize for having that. And two, you know, like that Tampa montage that our group put out, like the remarkable thing about it is, you know, I think of a great, like, I was a big Marvin Hagler fan. Like, I loved that era of boxing. I loved Hitman Hearns. I loved Duran. Loved Leonard. Really loved Hagler. And one of Marvin Hagler's great lines was, it's tough to get out of bed to do road work at 5 a.m. when you've been sleeping in silk pajamas. The thing about your Tampa team this year is...
Do you just reel those off the top of your head, or do you prepare with those?
John, you know me. All I've got is shallow charisma. After that, I got nothing. I got a couple of lines and some shallow charisma, and that's about it. But I just loved Hagler, and I love that line. And I think about your Tampa squad. Like, for a team that's never won the Stanley Cup, I get that. For a team that's never won the Stanley Cup, I can understand, you know, Ian LaPerriere jumping front and putting his face in front of a Paul Martin slap shot. I understand that because that guy wants to win the Stanley. Like, that guy needs it and wants it. You guys have done it. And you're still doing that, John. Like, isn't there even a part of you? Because to all of us, we're like, these guys are as hungry as they were for the first one. Like, isn't there a part of you that's like, this is kind of amazing. These guys have done this top of the mountain twice, and they're still doing it, John.
They are. And it would be unreal if we were having this conversation a month from now and we've, you know, won our third, which would be, it would be epic. But it is like, first of all, human nature would sit here and say, wow, all right, we did it. We did it once. We've pushed as far as we can go. It's maybe it's okay for somebody else to do it because, you know, our names are already on the cup. And maybe that's why teams don't repeat all the time. And maybe that's why there is gaps between teams. Like, you know, you look at the mini dynasty Chicago had, well, they didn't win the back-to-backs. And LA won a couple, but they didn't win back-to-back. And so, I don't know. Does that creep into your head? I don't know, but with the group we've had here, especially that core, I don't know if they're letting anybody that, you know, whether you're Hagel or Paul have just come into the organization, or you're Belmar and Perry who've, you know, just came in at the beginning of the year. I don't know if they're allowing anybody, you know, to have that kind of mindset. And so it's, you know, so far it's really served us well.
One of the things that we've talked about playing with your Tampa squad, and certainly last season, I mean, the Yanni Gourde line was fantastic and has been a story and has become a model. And they all go, you know, they all leave. Coleman's off to Calgary, and Barkley Goodrow goes to the Rangers, and Yanni Gourde ends up with the Seattle Kraken. And we say, that's going to be a real hole here for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And then the general manager goes out and puts together another, I don't want to say the same because all players are different, all lines are different, but a similar third line. Like, from a coaching point of view, how do you make a third line work? Like, it seems as if you've been able to put together here in a couple of seasons two very distinct yet similar third lines. And I don't need to tell anyone listening to this radio show right now how crucial a third line is to your Stanley Cup hopes.
It is. You do need to have, yeah, I always say this, and many other people have too. Like, at times in the playoffs, you get a top six group, and, you know, oftentimes they might just cancel themselves out, and then who's picking up the slack after that? And even the third line, but you go down, even, you know, whatever line you consider Pat Maroon playing on, he sure, you know, may not get the minutes, but boy, he gives you some big moments. And it's those, I don't want to say bottom six, but whatever you want to call them, some of your depth in your group. But they got to be pretty committed guys. They got to be, there's got to be a little bit of role definition and how we define that role, and unselfish play and an unselfish mindset to know, hey, listen, I'm probably not going out in the power play, and I'm probably not going to be playing, you know, north of 18, 19 minutes. But when I do go out there, I've got a job, and that job is to keep the puck out of the net and make sure that I'm late making the other team labor to play in the offensive zone. And so when you do that and you kind of have that mindset, everybody, it's like the pieces in the puzzle, everybody slots in, but you need some pretty committed guys to check their egos at the door and understand, like, even if it's a, you know, Hagel who had north of 20 goals for Chicago and hasn't put that gold kind of number up with us, but has been extremely valuable for our team. And so it's big credit to Julian and the kind of guys that he's brought in, knowing the fit they will have with our team. And it's worked out, but it takes some unselfish, you know, thought process for the players to be able to fit into that role.
Just a couple more for you. I know you're busy today. I want to ask you about the structure of the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I've been told the motto is structure or sit. And I don't think that just comes from the coach, but I do wonder, like, as far as, you know, accountability of play on the ice, who are some of the guys that make sure that everyone is minding their knitting, following the rules, following the structure that you and your coaching staff have in place?
Yeah, like, I don't want to sit here and say, oh, well, we're all structure-based, because I think we have a model, we have our rules. You know, whether, you know, to go as far as sitting, that's happened in the past. It probably doesn't really happen now just because of the way everybody's mindset is now. But you're right, we do have a model how we play, but there's a group of guys, like, even, you know, you start with the Stamkoses and that group who, listen, I'm not going to, you know, you're not going to strap Stamkos and Cooch and Point and all these guys to a chair and say, do this, 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 or you're sitting.
Sure.
I mean, these guys, they're world-class talents that you have to let breathe. But there are simple things in the game and where you turn, like, taking risk out of your play. And those are things that, for us, is big. And there's, like, I don't want to say they're non-negotiables, but we've kind of, you know, accountability is a big thing with us. And everybody holds players accountable in their own way, and coaches, and even holding myself accountable. But we've also gone through the wars of, like, what has worked and what hasn't. And it's different for teams, and it's all different for everybody and how they're made up. But, you know, when we were, I guess, you know, the greatest show on ice in 2019 and everything was going our way, we still had holes in our game and they got exposed. And, you know, John Tortorella's crew exposed them, and, you know, we had to have a mental mindset of how, not so much, you know, was it our structure and do it my way or the highway, but, you know, just some of the things that what worked and what doesn't work, and the risk and reward for things. And unfortunately, it took us getting, you know, swept by Columbus, but I think it went a little deeper than that. That was kind of like the crowning jewel of, like, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. But in the end, it's kind of served us well now. It's easier to talk about now because we've won, but there is a strong foundation we built over the years, and now it's paying dividends.
The 83 Islanders meets Marvin Hagler, the story of the Tampa Bay Lightning. John, this has been great. Listen, continued success. Your team is must-watch television, clearly. This is a fun run. Keep it going. We'll check back regularly. Thanks so much for this.
Yeah, hey, and you appreciate these interviews go so much smoother, eh, when Elliot's not around?
Oh, isn't it so nice? He just doesn't get in the way. His big ham-fisted questions. The questions, they go on and on. I can almost feel you glazing over when Elliot starts talking. So it is really refreshing. Thanks for pointing that out, John. I'll make sure that I mention that to Elliot. You be well. Good luck in the next round. There he is, John Cooper, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who joins us here on the program. Hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed talking to John Cooper. Don't forget tonight, and we wish the Tampa Bay Lightning all the success in the world, and we thank their group for making John available on, even though it's an off day. They're all off days, folks, right now for Tampa as they wait for the winner of the Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes. We appreciate Tampa making John available. Tonight, New York Rangers facing off against the Carolina Hurricanes. It is game 5. The story of this series has been the story of the Carolina-Boston series, which is the home team wins. You can watch this one, Sportsnet East, Ontario, and Pacific, starting at 7 o'clock Eastern. The Oilers and the Flames at 9:30 Eastern on CBC and Sportsnet. This is All Hockey Night in Canada, folks, with your host, Ron McLean. Last night, the Blues keeping themselves alive. They beat the Avalanche 5-4 in overtime. Tyler Bozak with the heroics as we bring back Matt Marchese, our producer, to close out the show today. Cooper's always excellent. And another, you know, interesting interview. I always find it, You know, I'll tell you, Maddie, I always find it interesting when a coach always, whenever a goaltender steals a game, and not that he's apologizing for that, or it just almost sounds like, you know, sheepishly a coach will say, yeah, he probably stole that game for us. I'm with Kelly Rudy. Don't apologize for having a great goaltender. It's like apologizing for having a 60-goal score. Oh, Matthews won the game for the Maple Leafs. Well, he's on the team. Drafted him, you paid him, he's on your team. You know what I mean?
That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to steal games for you when they're that good. You know, and it's, and if I'm a coach with a goalie like that, I'm not apologizing for anything because it allows me to do other things. It allows me to maybe take a little bit more risk. It allows me to, you know, play a certain style that I wouldn't be able to with another goaltender because, and I don't know if it's just because you have a great goalie means that you're going to be a great coach. I think that is a little bit of an oversimplification that we do use. However, you still have to be able to coach the other guys on the roster. Does it help having a really great goalie? Absolutely it does. But, you know, like the one thing I really liked about the conversation with John is he pointed out Brandon Hagel to begin, like as one guy who scored 20 goals before he got to Tampa and he hasn't put up numbers offensively, but he's sacrificing that because he knows that if he plays a certain way and contributes to a certain role, that he's got a very good chance to win a Stanley Cup. And I think that's what gets lost in a lot of cases. And that's what makes the Tampa Bay Lightning so different.
You know, I don't know if they can do this. I think they can. I don't want to bet against the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't want to bet against a team that has, like, you know how much I love Victor Hedman. I don't want to bet against a team that has him and Vasilevsky and Kucherov and Stamkos and Cirelli and Killorn and. It's a really tall order. But as much as we're, and again, I'm going to get ahead of myself here, as much as people may be looking at the Western Conference Final and saying, oh man, Connor McDavid versus Nathan MacKinnon, give me that. Give me either of those two teams against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yep.
Only problem is, man, you want Tampa to be fully healthy. Like, you want Braden Point in there. Get greedy. You really want Braden Point in there. Anyway, thanks to John Cooper for stopping by. Maddie, great book and always great catching up with John Cooper, who somewhere down the road plays, needs to win a Jack Adams Trophy as the Coach of the Year. Thanks to Andy Strickland for stopping by. Thanks to Frank Saravelli, who is in Calgary tonight, folks, for what could be a closeout game. 3-1, the Oilers lead the series with the Calgary Flames. Do they close out or are we going back? Thanks to Sarah Sivian from The Athletic getting us set for the Hurricanes and the Rangers, and Elliot Friedman for kicking it off. Merrick Show back tomorrow.